Well, good morning, all you East Tennesseans. Of course, there could be some Southwest Virginians in the group. Maybe some Western North Carolinians. Did I get that right? And then maybe some Kentuckians, even. So I don't really know how far this is. Of course, when you're talking about radio, I think this radio station does broadcast on iHeartRadio, which is worldwide. So literally, there could be somebody in Tahiti listening to My Car Guru, thinking, boy, he's a nice guy. No, I'm just kidding. Well, he is a nice guy, but anyway, I'm biased. The interesting thing today to me was just looking at this technology that I'm using right now. Technology is all around us, and it creates great opportunities and perplexing problems. I'm using a cantankerous Apple Mac computer. This is the big one, desktop, which I think is a dinosaur. But anyway, they have all these upgrades that you do, and they have all these fancy names for them. You know, Apple's really weird about that, but they come out with these new programs. The worst thing you can do is upgrade, because all it does, from what I hear, is slow your computer down. So this thing is very slow, and the reason I know that is when it's thinking, a little beach ball-like thing pops up and starts spinning around. And when I see that, it's kind of like seeing a check engine light come on your car, say, oh no, here we go again. But that's kind of what this thing has been doing. But it is pretty cool how I do this when I broadcast from the dealership. You know, I typically will go to the radio station and do my shows, but sometimes I have to call in. As you know, sometimes we have to run reruns because I am a businessman and I do get caught up in circumstances beyond my control. But this particular day, I am in my office surrounded by all my memorabilia. And I don't know why I feel necessary to say that. I'm alone. I'm flying solo. Tim is having his back rebuilt today. I probably shouldn't disclose. It's probably a HIPAA violation if I disclose that. So forget I said it. Wipe it out. Do not listen to that. Okay, so now that that's taken care of, Tim is, we'll be back here soon. Oh, I was looking out my window. Somebody just drove my 280Z by the showroom and right past my office. I've had a little problem with that thing. Of course, it was a radio show listener that owned that vehicle, 1978 280Z, great people. They bought it new and took it on their honeymoon. And every time I get in it, I feel romantic. I'd feel more romantic if my wife was sitting in the passenger seat. But anyway, we've had a little issue with oil not staying in the engine. And we all know that that can lead to a messy driveway. Since we want to keep this thing in the showroom, we don't want it to constantly pouring out oil on that beautiful tile in my Nissan showroom. So we had to fix that. I took it up to Johnny. Johnny's my guy. He works on all my old stuff. He endures me. But anyway, he it's funny. I'll pull in with an old car, and he'll say, "What have you done now?" I mean, that's no way to respond, but that's what he does. And but he always jumps in willingly. At least that's what he says. He probably cusses me when he goes home. But anyway, this 280Z had a oil pan leak. And it's just so cool to be able to order a new oil pan gasket for a car that was built in 1978. And, you know, you can get stuff a lot older than that. But anyway, I digress, or foregress, whatever I do. I've gotten off topic. I was talking about the technology that I use in my office and this Apple computer. So there's this program called GarageBand. And it does kind of exactly what it sounds like. You can actually record multi-tracks of music on this, like for a band. You can have separate microphones for the guitar and for the singer and the drums and the horns and whatever else you've got. and you can mix it all together, and you can change the sound. Like, it gives me a bunch of choices here on the screen of what do I want my vocal to sound like. Do I want it to sound like a telephone vocal, natural, narration, edge, dance vocal? What the heck's dance vocal? May have to try that and see what it is someday. I'm almost afraid to push a button to change it right now. But anyway, so this thing records my voice, which it's doing right now, and then I send it to I just save the file to my music app on this Apple computer. So it goes to the music app. Then I have to convert the file from the one that GarageBand uses to a different kind of file. Now, what that does is something called compression. I'm not going to get into a big discussion about all that because I just barely understand it myself. But I know that when you compress something, you make it smaller, typically. So it takes my big file, which might be, 50 megabytes, and compresses it into only 25 megabytes, but it sounds exactly like it's supposed to. And so it compresses that, puts it into music, and then I save it on my computer. So I have to put it on my desktop, and I just kind of drag it and drop it over there, and then I open a program called Dropbox. Well, what's that? Well, that's a place where you can store information. It's in the cloud, not these beautiful white clouds that I see out my window right now, but some computer processor, computer storage device located somewhere, and I would assume in the United States. So my radio show goes there. Well, I share it with Mr. Bill Meade. You remember him, don't you? He used to be on my show, but he's busy gallivanting somewhere else. Now, he does his, he's the program director on this radio station, and it's big responsibilities, so I've been having to hang out with Tim Cable for a while, who's disabled right now. So anyway, we pray for Tim that he'll get better quickly. So I send the radio show to Bill Meade, who puts it together. And that's what you're hearing right now, is the product of this bunch of electronics, me and Bill Meade. So some things don't happen easily. Take a few steps. We were talking yesterday about a buyback situation with a customer that had a problem vehicle, was using a lot of oil, and shouldn't be doing that. And so he did not qualify for the lemon law. So we are working with him to solve this problem. Matter of fact, he's probably waiting on my phone call right now. Better get to that. I'll take a quick break, and I'll be back here in just a minute. You know, I mentioned yesterday that my dad was an airline pilot. Not really. He wasn't an airline pilot. Single-engine aircraft. He did solo a couple times. Well, numerous times. I have his logbook. And I said that he was flying an airplane called a Veronica Champion, which I always thought that was like his girlfriend, that, sound like a great name. Well, I found out, did a little research. It's not Veronica. It's Aeronica, or Aeronca Champion. A-E-R-O-N-C-A. So I have been wrong for 64 years. Well, probably not 64, probably 60 years is when I first thought he said Veronica. So her name isn't Veronica, it's Aeronica, Aeronca. So anyway, that's what he flew. I'm looking at it. I'm not sure I would want to fly in that thing. It is itty-bitty, a little small little motor. They still fly, though. People still fly them. It was, I think it was actually built in the 40s. It was a plane that they used in World War II to fly over and spot the Germans and see where they were. A little spy plane initially. So anyway, that's what my pops used to fly. It never ceases to amaze me what people keep in their cars. And really the condition of people's cars, not everybody, but I would say probably 25%, I don't even want to get in. And it's just, I don't know what the reason is. I guess maybe it becomes invisible to them. It's a, they get tired of throwing stuff out the window, I guess. I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things that I don't understand. I think that people should, but if you're going to trade cars, you need to invest a little time in cleaning yours up and getting it ready to sell. It's just, as I've mentioned many times, if you're going to sell your house, you're going to vacuum the carpet. And you're going to fix that hole that your grandson punched in the wall. And probably the leaky faucet. And maybe get some of the stains, rings off of the bathtub. The same thing happens with your cars. And I'm a firm advocate that folks, 2 times a year, you need to get your car detailed by a professional. It's going to cost anywhere from $100 to... I'm not just talking about a wash it outside, vacuum the inside, wash the windows. I'm talking about detailing. That's where you go underneath the hood in the trunk, clean the wheel wells out, use a pressure washer along the inside of the wheel wells, and clean, have the engine compartment cleaned. You know, it's going to cost $150 to $250 to have that done. And I can't afford that. Well, you can, because that money will come back to you. And maybe even triple if you just do that before you trade your car. You know, you just think about it. You are bringing your car in. You're driving it into a dealership, and a total stranger is coming out and looking at your car, and he is judging that car based on mileage, condition, and market demand. Those are the three things that determine the value of a used car. Condition, the impact on a person's brain will be strong if he sees a nasty, dirty car. And because he thinks, well, if it looks that way on the inside of the car and on the outside, then, you know, maybe they haven't changed the oil very, very good, very often. Well, followed the manufacturer's schedule. You know, one of the best things you can do, though, is to keep a book in your glove box. And every time you do anything to your car, write it down. Keep receipts as well. Those make a big difference. They give us warm fuzzies when we appraise your car. When somebody says, by the way, here's the maintenance schedule. I've followed everything, got oil changed every 5,000 miles, rotated my tires, got the 30,000-mile service, 60,000-mile service, 90,000-mile service. Everything that's been done, it's right here in this book. And we just say, thank you. That was so kind of you to do that. And now I'm going to pay you more for your car because you did that. It does make a difference. I was reading an article about things that people can do, and I agreed with most of them, you know, to get the maximum value for your car. Right now, you get maximum value because of the market. It's just nuts right now, as I've been telling you. Hey, I did hear that lumber prices are coming down, though. I saw that on the news yesterday, that they are plummeting. So those of you who are in the market to build, you might want to wait a little bit longer until the prices. Now, they're still not down to pre-pandemic levels, but they're coming down. The chip shortage, when it kind of gets worked out, you will see prices come back down on vehicles, and your used car is going to be worth a lot less. But right now, it is up there for sure. But thoroughly clean the car. Get it ready to sell. Odors and stuff like that are a big issue. You know, if you have a musty smell on the car, that's probably because it's gotten wet over time. It's possible that your condenser tray and your air conditioning has got a leak in it and has soaked your carpet or soaked the mat underneath your carpet, and you may not even know that you are existing in a moldy environment, and you definitely could be. You know, trust your nose. Just what you need to do is get my wife to come smell it. I'm telling you, she can smell any kind of moldy smell or anything that doesn't smell normal. She knows. Her nose knows. She'll probably be really upset if she hears that. Anyway, clean the car. General maintenance needs to be done. If you've got check engine lights on, find out what they are. Don't go to Advanced Auto Parts and get them to plug it in and say, well, it's the O2 sensor. You know, you need to go to a car dealership that has the tools and equipment and get that fixed. Because that scares you, and it scares the dealer, because he knows, okay, I'm going to have to spend money. And, you know, they really don't have time to take it back into the shop and do a full diagnostic on your vehicle when the check engine light on. They're going to assume the worst, and that's going to cost you money. So don't be afraid of what it is. Just find out what it is. And then if you can tell them, well, I already had it tested. This is the repair order. This is what they say. I couldn't afford to do it right now, but this is what it is. And that will make them feel good also. Go ahead and pull a Carfax report on your car. Make sure that it's accurate. You know, if you see that you're showing an accident, you say, well, I never had an accident. And there could be an error on there, and you might need to get that taken care of. You know, it doesn't hurt to do a little research on values. We're seeing crazy differences in the numbers of the values based on Kelley Blue Book, NADA, Black Book, Manheim Auction Results, Edmunds.com. I was looking at a 2012 Porsche 911S that this guy, Porsche Carrera S, that this guy was wanting to sell to us. 50,000 miles, 2012, never been painted, clean history, three owner car, needed tires. And the range on that car value was $46,000 to $68,000. Wholesale value. Now, when I see something like that, you can't trust the book. Now, a customer, let's say that they just look at KBB or they just look at one and they end up seeing, you know, the low value or the high value. Well, they don't know what their car's worth, and they go in with these expectations and they get their hearts broke. I know that's not right grammar. I just like to say it. And you know, when you're negotiating, get a value for your trade-in and find out. Ask them, well, what's the ACV on my car? They're going to look at you and say, how do you know what ACV means? And what you say is, Lenny Lawson told me. Oh. So ACV stands for actual cash value. That's the real dollars that the dealership intends to put in your car. Forget about trade allowance. Trade allowance is a fuzzy number. It's based on the MSRP of the car, or it could be based on that pumped window sticker that a lot of dealers use, the addendum sticker. So what they pay you for your trade versus that number is irrelevant. What really matters is the trade difference, right? The difference between what they're selling you and what they're paying you for yours. That's what you got to pay. So let's find out what the real numbers are. Let's negotiate the selling price of the car first and find out what we can buy the car for without the trade. And then say, okay, I want to know what the ACV is on my trade-in. What are you really putting in my car? And then you subtract those numbers. Now you're looking at a discounted retail price, and you're looking at the real money on your car. And that will result in you knowing what you're really paying. You know, these dealers that advertise like $6,000 over book value and $10,000 over book value for your trade, that is a bogus claim. And if the only way that really matters is if they'll pay you that for your car, whether you trade or not. And that is the key. If you ask them, okay, I'll take $8,000 over book value for my trade. Just write me a check for it. They'll back up faster than Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk. You cannot buy that because it's not valid. And you'll see. And you know what you do then? You spin. You do the spin move and head straight to your car, unlock the door, get in, and leave. Because if they're going to do that on the sales floor, you don't want to go any further with them, because that's the game that they play, and they're going to do it at every stage of the process, including in the finance office. So watch out. Watch out for that. Okay, we'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, we're going to finish this up today. So you're thinking about buying a camper, aren't you? You know, it looks like a lot of fun. Most people who buy campers end up not camping. So I'm not, you know, I don't want to have any hate mail or anything from RV dealers or anything, but I'm telling you, if you've never camped before, if you've never had a camper before, now some people love the camping lifestyle. They love to pack up all their stuff and hook it up to a truck or a SUV and drive all over the place and pull into these campsites and hook up the sewer lines and the water lines and the cable and start, you know, roasting wieners and all that kind of stuff. And that is just, that is life to them. But if you are not used to that life, you aren't going to like what it is involved in doing it. I would venture to say that 70% of the people who buy campers end up losing their rear ends and selling them within 2 years. I'm in that position right now. I thought I'd really enjoy camping and having a camper. But I'm going camping with my grandson and my wife in Cincinnati, Ohio, at this beautiful place called Winton Woods in July. And if I don't really enjoy it that time, it's going to be for sale. It's a 34-foot Premier, Bullet Premier, with three slide-outs and a master bedroom and an island and a big screen TV, and it's wonderful. But I like staying in a hotel with bamboo sheets. I'm 64 years old. I'm spoiled when it comes to that. I enjoy the camaraderie and, you know, the adventure and stuff, but you know, you just make sure that you're going to like it. What I would do is I would recommend renting one and just trying it out a few times before you take the plunge, because you talk about depreciation. Right now, you can't find them anyway. There's not that many out there. But before you spend a bunch of money on a camper, just make sure that's what you want to do. And that's just a little bit of advice from an experienced camper loser. We'll see you tomorrow.